Welcome to Modern Ancestral Mamas, a podcast for mamas created by mamas. We discuss ancestral food, cooking, feeding our families, and holistic living with the everyday modern mom.
We are Corey and Christine, two mamas on a mission to nourish our families holistically while keeping it real in today's crazy world. Follow us on this adventure and enjoy the stories and information we share.
Hello, welcome back to Modern Ancestral Mamas. This is Christine from Nourish the Littles, and I'm joined by my co-host, Corey, from For Nutrients' Sake. And we are thrilled to have you guys back here again for another episode. And today we have probably one of the premier guests that we'll ever have on our show, which is Sally Fallon Morrell herself. You can applause now.
At some point, I'll have to figure out how to put those sound effects in there.
Yeah, totally. All right, Corey, do you want to give Sally's bio?
Oh, I thought you said you were reading it. Yeah, I can.
You're right.
Okay.
I'll do it.
All right. Okay, go.
All right. Sally Fallon is the founding president of the Weston A. Price Foundation and author of the best-selling cookbook Nourishing Traditions. When she is not busy at the foundation office in D.C., where the headquarters are, Sally loves spending time in her garden and cooking in the kitchen. She also enjoys reading books on metaphysics. Welcome, Sally, to the podcast.
Thank you. That's my hidden side.
It is. Actually, I was last week at church. Some church member mentioned to me that he's a philosophy professor at the local university, and he told me that he loves metaphysics. And I was like, wait a second, I know someone else who loves metaphysics. I don't know very many people that mention that.
Yeah, that's a pretty fascinating thing. I don't think I know. Maybe I feel like metaphysics is one of those things that maybe you know, you might have heard more about, but aren't necessarily sure that that's the title that it goes under. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's just esoteric.
All right. We are going to just dive right in today. We're going to skip our normal question that we usually ask, and we're just going to go straight in. So, Sally, if you would, we would love to hear the story of when you first read Dr. Price's book, Nutrition and Physical Degeneration, where how you found it, you know, what point of your life you were in, that sort of thing. So if you would give us that story and then how that led into you know, the rest of your life history.
Well, I guess it must have been about 26, so a long time ago. And it was after my first child was born, my daughter, and I was getting very interested in this whole subject of nutrition. And I found his book in, it was called the Yes Bookstore on Wisconsin Avenue in Washington, D.C. And it was a life-changing book for me. It was very confirming in a way because I came from a family of foodies. I think my parents were the first foodies. And they traveled a lot. And when they came home, my mother would make paella or cassoulet and stuff like that. So we were always eating real food. And my mother always used butter. She never used margarine or anything, which is I'm very grateful for. So anyway, and I like to cook. I had kind of taught myself from Julia Childs and taking some classes, and I cooked French cuisine. So I used lots of butter and cream and eggs, and I could use chicken liver and things like this. So when I read Dr. Price's book, I realized that I was doing things basically right. I mean, you could add to that, I wasn't taking cod liver oil, that kind of thing, but, and I didn't have raw milk. I didn't have access to raw milk. Anyway, so I just kept on, and I had three other children, three boys, and I spaced them 3 years based on Dr. Price, and they were all just super healthy. I also realized very young that the vaccinations were a really bad deal, and so I didn't vaccinate them. So then I got this idea to write the book Nourishing Traditions, and I enlisted the help of Mary Enig because I had no background in the science of this. And she agreed with me. She was just as concerned as I was about the direction we were going with our diet, the dietary guidelines, and especially what had just come in was this idea of when a baby's two, you put them on low-fat milk and margarine and no eggs and no fat. And I thought, this is horrendous. This is going to starve these children. And she thought the same thing. So I started writing the book. I asked her help, and that came out in 96. And I immediately felt it needed to be revised, which I did. And that came out in 1999. And in 1999, we also set up the Weston A. Price Foundation. And the rest is history. I'm trapped. I can't get out now.
So I wanted to tell this story really fast because I asked my mother, who got your book very early on, and I asked her how she got your book, because your book was not...
Oh, no, it was not publicized at all.
Right, right. So I asked her how she got it. Now, we lived in Montgomery County, Maryland, and which is not far from where you live in Brandywine, right?
No, I was living, well, back then. Living in Washington at that time.
Oh, you were in D.C. Okay. So at that time, we lived in Montgomery County. There was this little health food store near us, and my mom has always been... I always just called her, you know, a hippie mom. And so we would always shop at these health food stores. And at that point in time, my mom was a vegetarian because, you know, that was the healthy thing to do.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. And so she was shopping at this food co-op, and your book was on the shelf because you were a local author. And she picked it up because of the title being, you know, the
correct, yeah.
Right, the against the diet dictocrats or whatever, and that like sparks my mother's very rebellious spirit, and and so she picked it up, and it was just like such a huge deal in my family. Oh. And changed all of this stuff, and we became this, you know, we started hosting a food co-op pickup, and we started getting raw milk and all of these things. Unfortunately, I was a little bit on the older side, so I thought she had taken some crazy pills, but I came back around to it. So
well, was she getting the milk from Jake Zook?
I don't know.
Because I don't know who started our garage, and that was Jake Zook, but there were some really enterprising Amish who just jumped on this idea of doing the food deliveries.
Yeah. I know that we were a pickup for a while, and then she started using somebody else took it over, and they were the pickup. So I don't know who that was from. I just remember,
yeah,
we would get these deliveries on our front porch, and then random people would show up to pick up the. It's such a strange, you know, it's such a strange way of getting food, but it's amazing, amazing that the people were so on top of that.
And yeah, it just took off. We had 50 people picking up by the time we finished, and it was chaotic. Because they didn't understand about ordering, and things got really messed up, and it turned out to be a lot of work for me. But it just showed me, you know, there really is this pent up demand for good food and for raw milk.
Yeah.
Well, so go back to when you started the foundation. What, you know, you wrote Nourishing Traditions, and then what was the spark that made you think, okay, I need to start a nonprofit organization?
Well, at that time, I was on the board of the Price Pottinger Nutrition Foundation.
Okay.
And I would travel out to California for meetings. And I got really angry one day at something they did. And I said, you know what? I'm going to go home and start my own foundation. I didn't like to be messed with. And I also had, it's been building up, because I felt like that organization, it was the, you know, had this mandate to preserve his work, but they didn't want to publicize his work. It was just like a little private club, if you happen to know about them. And I thought, we got to get this information out there. And I wanted to do local chapters. I wanted to do that brochure we have that kind of outlines what we stand for. I don't think they really knew what they stood for. And and all of those ideas were rejected by the board. So we came out here and set up the foundation here and started local chapters. I mean, that has just been so successful. And the main, we call it the main bro, the main brochure, has made money for us because it brings in members. And yeah, so we didn't really know what we were doing. I just thought these things, we just need to do these things, and it's taken off. You know, we're just up to 15,000 members now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's such a huge accomplishment. I remember a story told to me by one of the first Texas chapter leaders ever. And she mentioned that I think the first conference you decided to do was in 2000.
It was in 2000. And I didn't want to do it. It was a board member who said, oh, you have to have a conference right away. Yeah. And so we hired this church basement and I invited some speakers and they all canceled.
Oh, no.
So we did have one stay on. I'm trying to remember his name, but he's good speaker about Chinese medicine. And then I just did the speaking. It was a 1-day conference. We had lunch and it's taken off from there. 75.
Oh. What'd you say?
75 people.
75 people. That's so first cool. One. Yeah. That's incredible. One day I feel like you need to share this at the conference, a little bit of the history of the very first one and how it started and, you know, just because it's grown so much since then.
Yeah, right. But
75 people is quite a difference between what it is now.
Yeah. You know, we have 12 to 1300 people now.
Yeah. That's incredible. Yeah. Okay. Can we talk for a second about what an ancestral diet is? Like, what is it that the Weston A. Price Foundation promotes diet-wise?
Yeah. Okay. So it's, first of all, it's a nutrient-dense diet. It's very high in minerals, and it's extremely high in what we call the fat-soluble vitamins, vitamins A, D, and K, that are found uniquely in animal fats, especially fats of grass-fed animals, and organ meats and certain seafood. And these were all considered sacred foods among traditional peoples, very important for having healthy babies. So our emphasis is on what we call the fat-soluble activators, which means that our diet is the complete opposite of the dietary guidelines, which are telling you that animal fats are bad. They actually say that animal fats are empty fats, that there's no vitamins in them. Nothing could be further from the truth. And, you know, high fiber, low fat, no salt or very reduced salt, which we are in favor of liberal salt. And I often say this diet is so lacking and it's lacking in what your body needs, and it creates cravings. And what your body's really craving is fats, right? But you're not supposed to eat fat. So what do you end up doing? You end up eating what I call the pornographic foods, which have hidden fats, but the wrong kind of fats, you know, the vegetable oils. We have been a very strong voice against the cholesterol theory of heart disease and warning people that absolutely the number one danger in the modern diet is the industrial seed oils. And after that, of course, it's the refined sweeteners. And then all of the additives, the worst one of which is MSG, which actually affects the hypothalamus, which is the master gland. One thing the hypothalamus does is produce oxytocin, the cuddle hormone. Okay. There is actually evidence showing that with MSG coming into the diet, the level of violence has gone up because people don't make the cuddle hormone anymore. Their hypothalamus glands are fried by all of the additives, especially MSG, fake flavors.
Oof.
Yeah. So it's a nutrient-dense diet, real food, support your local farmer, grass-fed, and avoid industrial food. There's a phrase out now, what do they call it? Ultra-processed food.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's kind of taken off. The other part of our work is promoting raw milk because the milk is ultra-processed and that ruins the milk.
So could you tell us really quickly then why raw milk? Mm-hmm. Okay. Go ahead.
First of all, it's not dangerous. It's intrinsically safe. It has a lot of components that keep it safe. I was at a recent hearing, and the farmer who was in the box there, the state testified, well, this place wasn't very clean. But what amazes me is for years they've been selling to thousands and thousands of people. Nobody's gotten sick. So raw milk is intrinsically safe. And once you pasteurize, and now it's ultra pasteurization, which takes milk to 284 degrees Fahrenheit. That's really hot. It totally messes up and destroys the proteins, and they become toxic in the body and allergenic. A little factoid, you know, people talk about raw milk being dangerous, but pasteurized milk causes 20 to 30 deaths from anaphylactic shock per year. That's got to be factored in when you talk about milk.
Oh, because of allergies.
Yeah.
Wow. Anaphylactic
shock is the number one cause of fatal anaphylactic shock.
Wow.
So it's very unsafe. Industrial milk is dangerous, and we know it's dangerous.
And what is it about raw milk that is not just the safety measures, but what is it about it that is, you know, that we want more?
Yeah. So raw milk is every single vitamin and mineral in raw milk has an enzyme or carrier protein that ensures 100% assimilation of everything: calcium, phosphorus, vitamin A, vitamin D, B12, B6, B2, they're all 100% absorbed. When you pasteurize, either the vitamins are destroyed or the carrier proteins are destroyed. And so it's much harder for you to absorb what's even left. So raw milk is kind of instant nutrition. Even if you have compromised digestion, even if you have a compromised immune system, raw milk is it contains all the immune factors your immune system needs, contains all these nutrients, and there's also very special fats in raw milk that you don't get many other places. In fact, butyric acid, which is really important for digestion and for the thyroid gland, that's where you get it from milk, and no place else.
So my 3-year-old right now is... she's not interested in eating much right now, but she's on a raw milk total kick. Like pretty much will, that's where she's getting all of her nutrition from.
Well, and that's fine. You know, the beauty of raw milk is, you know, I understand what moms go through today, and there's so many temptations. And they worry, are my children getting nourished? And it may be, you know, her family or her husband that was always giving them junk food. And it's really hard to go against this. I mean, I have so much sympathy for moms trying to do their best for their kids. Well, at least if she's giving them raw milk, she knows that they're going to be very well nourished. And raw milk can actually mitigate against some of the excesses of the modern diet. Kids will have strong bones. They'll have strong bones, strong teeth, and they'll grow tall.
Well, my 3-year-old is definitely tall.
Yeah. So that is, in this society, it's good to be tall. There's tall people are more successful. They do better in life. I'm sorry, but that's
poor Christine is really short.
I'm so short. My husband is so short. We are all a family of hobbits. But let me tell you, I pumped my kids up full of raw milk in the hopes that they will be taller than both my husband and I.
Well, when they opened up milk plants in Japan, and in those days it was just pasteurized, and they started eating a lot of cheese and stuff, the Japanese grew taller.
Interesting. Yeah.
Our national height average is going down dramatically.
Yes. Wait, in the U.S. it is?
In the U.S., yeah. Yeah, it's pretty scary, actually.
Lifespan height is going down.
Wait, what'd you say, Sally?
Lifespan is going down, fertility is going down, and height is going down.
Yeah, I mean, I knew the first two. I did not realize that height was going down. That's interesting. Okay. Let's... segue a minute, because I think that something that you don't talk about a lot and that is very interesting is that your time in France, Sally, and we'd love to hear a little bit more about this. I know I studied abroad in France, but I was only there for about a month, but it was a life-changing experience.
Let me just say, I've been to France before. My parents were Francophiles. They loved everything French. And I'd been to school in France. I'd lived with families in France. But then we got this wonderful opportunity to live in France. My husband's job took him there to run an office of an aerospace company. So it was really interesting for us. And we had a choice between renting a house in the suburbs with a lawn and, you know, having a kind of American life in France. And we decided that we wanted to be as French as we could. So we rented a house in the 7th arrondissement, which is considered the most French arrondissement. It's not very touristy. And we put the children in Ecole Bilingue, which is a bilingual school run in France, so it's a French-run school. And the little ones, my last child was actually born in France. That was quite an experience. And my third child was in Ecole Maternelle, which is like a nursery school. Mm-hmm. So we really immersed ourselves in the culture. I wrote a book about it. It's called An American Family in Paris. It's not really about nutrition, but just about our adventures there. I learned a lot about French cooking, more than I thought I knew. So, yeah, it was really interesting.
What are some of your favorite things that you learned, or most useful things?
You know what I really discovered in France was crème fraîche. I think that's the defining characteristic of French cuisine. It's such a different taste. And it's put in everything, soups, it's put in sauces. They make, you know, desserts with it. And so, yes, I learned about crème fraîche. And the way I learned about it was I made a mistake that I think a lot of Americans make. They go to the supermarket looking for whipping cream. And you can't find whipping cream in France. And you see this crème fraîche and you think, oh, that must be fresh cream. But it's not. It's sour cream. And that's how I discovered crème fraîche. Yeah.
But it's not sour cream in the way we think of sour cream in the U.S. Yeah. It's
different. Yes.
Are the creme fraiches here in the U.S. at the grocery store, even at a more high-end grocery store, let's say, are they along the same flavor profile?
Yes, they're authentic. They're authentic. But you can make your own, too, with raw cream.
Yes. Yeah. There's a recipe in Nourishing Traditions. Admittedly, I've never tried it. I always just buy it. But yeah.
Well, you know, for creme fraiche, you're going to heat it anyway. It's going to go in your sauce and in your soup. Although I say to put it on afterwards, most of us just put it in there. So, and the other thing was the reduction sauces. I took a wonderful class, a cooking class in France, and the teacher was Irish. So it was genuine French, believe me. It wasn't them trying to be different or anything. And we start off making broth, chicken broth. We made veal stock. We made fish broth. And that was just a real eye-opener, what you could do with the broth.
What can you do with broth?
Well, you make a sauce. You make a reduction sauce. And the best thing that we made was fish with a reduction sauce made with fish stock and creme fraiche.
Oh, wow. I'm definitely going to.
There's recipes in your book. It's in Nourishing Traditions. There's a couple of recipes. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds heavenly. Mm-hmm. Corey's been on a pan sauce kick lately, so.
Yeah. I have. Yeah. I like it with like Dijon mustard and then lemon juice.
Yeah,
too. Oh my gosh. I've been making it every time I roast a chicken and I just can't even, my mouth just like so
delicious.
Even now.
Yeah, it's better than gravy.
No, it's so good. I know. And I'm in the South and gravy is a big deal, but.
Well, Sally, a few weeks ago or months ago, I made the Bleu Blanc sauce for the first time from Julia. Yeah. I know I'm butchering it. I can't speak French. But it was I mean, it was like crack. I wanted to just like drink the entire pot. It was so delicious. And I definitely have to make it again. And I was surprised at how simple it was. Mm-hmm. It really is. It just elevates anything you use it with.
I recently wrote an article on sugar addiction. And I found this study where they had gotten these rats addicted to sugar. And then they gave them a diet that was 40% lard. And the rats didn't want the sugar anymore. And the researchers said they put it in such a way like this was a terrible thing, that they didn't want these sweet delicacies anymore. But they didn't want the sugar. And when you eat this way, this French way, with all of these fats and the cream, and of course we cook in lard, and the French used to cook in lard, of course. It's not that you never eat something sweet. It's just that you're not craving sweets all the time. And this is a huge hurdle for most Americans. I'm always shocked. I just came back from a funeral and they had a reception afterwards, and it's just cakes and cookies. And, you know, I just shocks me how much sugar people eat. When you eat this way, it's not like you're using willpower not to eat the sugar. It's that you don't want the sugar. And that's the place you need to get to.
Can we transition a little bit and talk about maybe like what your kids ate growing up, or, you know, how did you feed them? Because I know that there's going to be so many listeners wondering, well, we live in this world with all this processed foods and we're bombarded with it constantly. How on earth do we feed our kids real food? Yeah.
Well, I can't say that the diet was perfect because I was still working things out, you know. I snuck liver into a lot of things. I always tried to give them a good breakfast, usually eggs and bacon or eggs and sausage or oatmeal. And I made their lunches. I'm not sure the lunches always got eaten, but. And then what I would try to do is make one big meal a week, Sunday dinner, big roast, leg of lamb, a couple of chickens. And that's the big meal, a lot of work. But then we would have about 3 or 4 days of leftovers. So I'd make soup. I did a lot of soup, because we were definitely on a budget. And so they had a lot of lentil soup, I can tell you. But made with broth. Yeah.
I had this lentil soup at a Turkish restaurant in Jacksonville. And we had it for my birthday back in, last year. And then one of my kids asked to go to the same restaurant, which, mind you, is an hour and a half away, mm-hmm. specifically for this soup for their birthday. So I need to figure it out because it is so good. It's like a lemony, I don't know.
Yes, it needs to be sour. Yeah, lentils need to be sour. I tried to do organ meats once a week. At that time, there was a Safeway on Wisconsin Avenue. We call it the social Safeway. But a lot of embassies bought food there, and they had all the organ meats. They had heart, liver, sweetbreads. I could get brain there. So it's really hard to find those things now. But it was right there, so I could try all those recipes. And then one night a week I had fish. So it was the big roast, then leftovers, and then organ meat and fish. And I learned a lot of clever things. Like I made heart enchiladas, and they didn't even know that it was heart. See, and so I was very sneaky. Yeah. My son called me once. He said, "Mom, I'm making this spaghetti sauce in your book." And he said, "It has liver in it." He said, "Did you put liver in our spaghetti sauce?" And I said, "Yes, I did."
Okay, so now the follow-up question is, were any of your kids ever picky about what you were making, and how did you handle that?
Mostly they were picky about eggs. And I'm picky about my eggs. So I allow pickiness for eggs. Okay. You have your eggs any way you want them. I just want you to eat those eggs. So, and yeah, they were probably not as picky as most kids, but there were things they didn't like for sure. And I think it's important to mostly cook things they like. Mm-hmm. You want them to try new things, but that they ate vegetables and they ate the food with the liver hidden in it.
So. Yeah. Yeah, I hear the egg thing. I have a family member with the same distrust of eggs. But, you know, I just sneak them in. Honestly, I can put them in ice cream or, baked goods. But mostly, ice cream and mayonnaise. Those are the two that they can always get raw eggs in. Or smoothies. I'm always putting raw eggs in smoothies.
In fact, I found a source of raw milk so they were all still home when I found that source of raw milk. And I could get cream by the gallon. And I made a lot of ice cream for them. And I didn't mind if they went to the freezer at night and got ice cream because it was cream and egg yolks, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Just kind of load your freezer up with homemade ice cream.
Yeah.
And then
almond cookies, the almond cookies in the book. I made those every week.
I don't think I've ever tried those. Have you tried those, Corey, the almond cookies?
No, but I know what she's... Well, I have tried them because she made them at the Baltimore conference when she did the cooking class at the Baltimore conference. So I tried them there, but I haven't ever made them.
Yeah, I made those a lot.
Okay. That's good to know. Can we transition over a little bit to talking about feeding babies, actually, and specifically we want to talk about formula because we know that that is a hot topic right now. And, you know, we just want to talk about why commercial formula is detrimental and what are the alternatives?
Right. Well, obviously we hope that all moms will breastfeed. Now that's mom's diet needs to be really good when she's breastfeeding or the milk won't be up to par. And the breastfeeding folks really take umbrage at this. They say, well, if you tell the mom she has to have a good diet, she might not breastfeed. So it's not breastfeeding for breastfeeding's sake. It's breastfeeding for having a healthy baby. And if your baby is not doing well on your breast milk, if you don't have enough, and yes, that happens frequently, or if you don't want to breastfeed, that's okay too. But baby needs something that's as equivalent to breast milk, and formula is not the equivalent of breast milk. One of the most important things about breast milk is that it's very high in cholesterol and has special enzymes so the baby will absorb the cholesterol. And this is not a mistake in nature. Babies need a lot of cholesterol for the development of their brain, the gut, for hormone production, and for healthy skin. And they can't make cholesterol. Grown-ups can make cholesterol, but babies are immature. All that hasn't come online yet, and they need to get it from what they're eating. Formula made for babies contains no cholesterol. Now, if you go out and buy milk replacement for animals, the third ingredient is animal fat. Let that sink in. The third ingredient is animal fat because they know if they don't give animal fat containing cholesterol to growing animals, they will not grow right and they'll die. They won't thrive. So they know what to do for the animals, but they're not doing this for people, for babies. The main ingredients are skim milk and sugar. Okay. So why is this? Well, the industry has figured out, the dairy industry has figured out, that they make it at least 5 times more on the valuable butter fat by putting it in ice cream than just selling you butter or putting it in formula. So the decisions about what's going into baby formula in this country are being made by accountants. They're not being made by scientists. And why waste this precious butter fat on growing children and babies? It is an absolute indictment of our culture, our society, and our values. And the industry knows this. Someone once said to Mary Enig, we know there should be cholesterol in this formula, but we're not allowed to put it there. Yeah, it's just, it's heartbreaking. It's sickening. And our babies are so sick. And then you've got these babies who are actually starving. Their brains are not being, all the connections are not being made in their brain. Their brains are not growing properly. And then we inject them over and over again with aluminum, which is neurotoxic. Is it any wonder we have so much autism? Is it any wonder we still have so many developmental delays? Is it any wonder that the IQ of this nation is going down?
So I could
go on, but it's just horrendous. It is horrendous. And these companies are allowed to promote formula as just as good as breast milk. And now there's a new thing coming along, which is we can't, we don't want to promote breastfeeding because it makes moms who are not breastfeeding, it makes them feel guilty or it's traumatic for them. Now, I'm not condemning any mother who's not breastfeeding for whatever reason, but she needs something better than formula. And we provide it in Nourishing Traditions and on our website. We provide a recipe for baby formula that's based on whole raw milk and has whole food ingredients that bring this up to par with human milk. It's not 1, 2, 3 to make. It's a little bit difficult to make. But at least 20,000 babies have grown up on this formula, and we get uniform praise on how healthy they are.
Well, I did.
That's why I got into this, because I was able to breastfeed my daughter with a lot of effort. And she stopped at eight months. She just wasn't getting enough. I had practically zero milk for my boys. And my second child was a boy. He was starving. He was starving. And, you know, I was a breastfeeding Nazi, and my baby was starving on my breast milk. So I had this old book. It was called Nutrition for Tots to Teens, and it had a recipe in there, basically adding extra vitamin C. And I think there was one other thing. But anyway, I was desperate. At that time, I could get raw milk. I fixed up this bottle. I gave it to my crying baby. Listen, I know what moms go through when their babies are starving, basically they're starving. And I gave this to him, and he drank that whole bottle and smiled at me for the first time and stopped crying. Mm. So I just, and I tried to nurse at the same time. I figured, I found out about this little lactate thing where you can fill this little plastic bag and you fill it with the formula, homemade formula, and he can nurse at the same time. I did that for several months. But I don't know what would have happened if I hadn't had this formula. So I asked, when we wrote Nourishing Traditions, I asked Mary, are you okay with putting a recipe for formula in there? And she was all for it. And she's the one who came up with the recipe, kind of an improved recipe. We made it. We tasted it. We took it in to be tested. And then I said, well, what about babies who can't do any dairy? And she said, Gerber used to make a meat-based formula that had liver in it. So let's do that recipe too. And that recipe's actually saved some babies' lives. So That's probably the most controversial thing that we do is promote this raw milk formula, because it's like we're giving babies this terrible, unsafe food. But I'll tell you, formula has killed a lot of babies. That's why they shut down that plant. It was right in the middle of COVID, and they couldn't get formula because the formula was killing babies. It was so polluted and full of pathogens, and apparently the factory was just horrible and had infractions that they never fixed, and the FDA wouldn't go after them. And that's when it really opened up. People were looking, what do we do? And they found our formula on our website.
I got kicked out of a mom Facebook group once because I suggested somebody check out
the formula
recipe, and they said, oh, we can't talk about that. And they kicked me out, but I said it anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I've never used either of the formulas, but I have tons of friends that used it, and also the liver formula.
Yes.
And that one is amazing.
Yeah, I was at a conference, and this man, very nice man, came and sat down beside me and showed me this picture of this beautiful little girl with a round face and rosy cheeks. I have her photo on, you know, with all my photos of my kids. And he said this baby could not keep out down. I guess the mom couldn't breastfeed or wasn't going to. So the baby was projectile vomiting anything that had milk in it. And he said, we were desperate. And we thought, well, might as well try this liver formula. So they made it up and they gave her a bottle. She drank it down and held it down, didn't vomit. Mm-hmm. And so they brought her up on this formula and saved her life.
You know, I think a lot of moms assume that formula from the grocery store has been, you know, scientists or whoever has kind of evaluated breast milk and then that's just recreated it from in a lab, you know, but that's clearly not what's happening.
No, it's, you know, conventional dried milk, and that really, and dried whey also, that really hurts the proteins. Then there's vegetable oils and sugar, not lactose, not the kind of sugar that's in breast milk, but most of them are sugar or high fructose corn syrup. And another terrible thing they do is they put iron in it. Now, it used to be that the formula for up to 6 months was iron free because milk is very low in iron. The baby does absorb the iron that's there, but this is why I'm concerned about exclusive breastfeeding after 6 months, because the baby will become anemic. You want to, of course, get all the cord blood for the baby. And by 4 to 6 months, you start feeding them iron-rich foods like egg yolk and pureed liver, which you cannot get anymore. The baby food, don't get me started. It's just pureed fruit. It's just pure sugar. And it's either in aluminum or plastic. I mean, what are we thinking?
The baby aisle is one of the most depressing aisles to walk down. Yeah. It infuriates me to no end.
Yeah. And there's a few little products with meat in them, like skinless chicken breasts. And then weird things like quinoa. And quinoa is really hard to digest. The idea of giving this to a baby is incredible. But yeah. You used to be able to get liver and egg yolks in the little baby jars. And so, I mean, they're very easy to fix, but if mom wasn't going to do it, at least you could get them for your baby. But you can't anymore.
Yeah. It's so interesting to me because I've heard parents say before, oh, but, you know, once my baby started drinking formula, they slept through the night, for example, or, you know, they were full. And I've always wondered, but how is that possible?
You know, in the 16, 17, 1800s, when a baby cried too much, they gave it opium. Yeah. No, this is not nothing new, but you have to ask yourself, what are they putting in these formulas that lets the baby sleep like that?
Yeah. There's gotta be something to like trick the body to think that it's satiated.
Yes. Yes. And I'm sure they've worked it out.
Yeah. My grandmother, she was born in South America, but, so when she was a baby, so long time ago, they, for whatever reason, her mother couldn't breastfeed her as well. And I learned that her mother was giving her sugar water to like feed her and keep her quiet. And she would cry all the time, like all the time, all the time, all the time. Because she was starving.
Is hungry, hungry. Probably have low blood sugar because they're being fed with sugar. I know my mother breastfed me, and we lived in Ohio at the time near Young's Dairy. So I'm pretty sure I got a start on raw milk. And I ended up the tallest of my siblings. But my brother, I remember her making the formula for him, and it was condensed milk and Karo syrup. That was the formula.
Do you know what? There's a movie called, I used to watch it all the time when I was a kid. It's called McClintock. and it's a John Wayne movie. Yeah. And there's a whole scene of it where they're talking about they needed condensed milk to feed this baby, which is ridiculous, right? Yeah. Because it was, you know, it's set in the 1800s and stuff. And like, and they're out in the West, some cowboy town, and they're looking for condensed milk because she can't feed her baby, which is stupid. But
yeah,
anyway, I love that movie. That was just the one part. So beyond formula and well, I guess not just beyond formula, what do you see as being, sort of the biggest hurdle for, mothers in this day and age?
Yeah, well, the pressure to vaccinate, and it takes a lot of strength to, go against that. I always say to young people, before you get married, make sure you're on the same page with the vaccinations, because unfortunately there have been a lot of divorces over this, and when then the babies are taken and forced to be vaccinated. So that is a huge hurdle for moms. So you need to educate yourself before you have your children, and you and your spouse need to be in agreement on it. I was very lucky because my husband, I mean, he was a very sweet man, and he just figured this wasn't his bailiwick, so he didn't interfere in any way with my decisions.
Okay, so vaccination, what else would you say?
Well, and then, of course, it's just the food out there. Let's just say you go to the grocery store, and you got the child in the cart, and it's candy everywhere, and, you know, my kids, they learned very fast. It was just absolute no. You know, we went through, can I have this, Mom? I said, absolutely not. And there was just no arguing about that. So they learned young. But I'm sure they snuck, candy and stuff. In fact, they told me they did. So. but I think if you're giving them real food at home, a nutrient-dense diet, particularly if you're always using butter, there'll be a certain amount of resistance to all of this.
So you're saying that even if they're at school and they, you know, swap lunches with their friends or something, that you're not going to...
I'm not going to obsess about that and not gonna harp on it. I'll tell you something interesting. So my grandchildren are in public school in Austin, and, you know, they put that milk out on the plates. Well, the older one, he got it right away. He shouldn't drink that milk. But the younger one was drinking it, and he got asthma. And I said, listen, Nick, you get out and find the raw milk right away. And I want to say thank you to Judith McGeary. The raw milk is available in the farmer's market. So he got the raw milk, and the asthma cleared up right away. And it's so funny to, or it's sweet to see a four-year-old. This is a four-year-old boy saying, yep, I know unless I drink raw milk, I'm going to get asthma. So that's what a lesson.
Yeah, that's amazing too, because that's one of those things that people just assume is a lifelong problem.
Oh,
you know, asthma.
Yeah, it just cleared up.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes he does get that kind of milk and he gets sick. Yeah, he just has to stay home.
I think there are a lot of things, a lot of these illnesses that we think are, you know, lifelong, are going to be lifelong issues for our children. But if we start making changes in our lifestyles, that they start to become, you know, a non-issue.
Yeah.
Like this happened for my family for sure.
Yeah.
You know, my daughter had eczema, and then we started changing her diet and it cleared up and it hasn't been an issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's, you know, this is one of those things the doctor was like, oh, she'll just deal with it for the rest of her life. And I was like, I don't accept that.
And it makes them miserable. And then they put them on steroids or whatever, and that hinders their growth and development and gets them hooked on drugs right away. Yeah. Mm. We're in the 11th hour in this country. The situation is pretty desperate with our children. To me, it is absolutely the number one problem in this country, and I can't predict what's going to happen. I often call it the natural selection of the wise. The parents who are wise enough to feed their kids right and keep them off the vaccinations and the drugs, they are going to have grandchildren and great-grandchildren and so forth. But I do unfortunately predict a steep decline in our population numbers. It's already happening.
I
hate to be pessimistic, but
I know. I'm like, how do we end on a lighter note?
Well, I did want to ask.
Lighter note is that I think people are waking up, and the COVID fiasco woke a lot of people up to what's going on. This phrase ultra processed food is, people are hearing it, and a lot of people really are trying to change. So that's the good news.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that at least, you know, I have like a weird social circle because we homeschool. So there's going to be more people who are crunchy in my, you know, circle than not. But I think that even those who are not, who wouldn't consider themselves crunchy, are still at least using butter and not margarine.
Yeah.
So I count that as a win.
Yeah, I mean, the Gospel of Mark says, unless these days are shortened, no one will survive. So this whole plunge into processed food, it's got to stop, or no one will survive. It's just all there is to it.
Okay, so we've got a tiny bit of time left. I would like to ask you one more thing, and then we're gonna have a moment to talk about how we can support the foundation. But my one more question is, how do you handle, or how did you handle the teenage years? Because Christine and I have not gotten there yet. My oldest is going to turn 13 this year. I'm curious about if you just, you know, stuck with the, well, at home we do it this way. Or if you kind of tried to help them make better choices when they're outside of the home, or how did you handle friends coming over? I don't know.
Or going to friends' houses. So we had a few absolute rules, and then the rest, I was very loose about it. They could do whatever they wanted. So one rule was they had to have dinner at home. Okay, so even on Saturday or Friday nights. Now, we lived in Washington, D.C., which is surprisingly a great town for teenagers to grow up in, because there's a lot to do. They're not hanging around the malls. They actually go to museums, and there were a lot of diplomats' kids who, you know, kind of a different background. There was actually a pool hall near us where they would go and hang out. That was fine with me. I thought that would be kind of fun. But they had to have dinner at home. They had to do their homework, and they had to do their chores. But otherwise, I was pretty laissez-faire, and I got a lot of criticism from the other parents. But that's how I did it. You can't be picking on them about everything, so you have to pick your battles. And they all turned out fine. You know, I had a little bit of trouble with my youngest one, but he's fine now. So
I actually love that. I love that idea of, nope, you know what? Our family does dinner together every night, and then you can go do your thing.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. That's what we did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I like that a lot. I think I remember hearing you say one time too, that you would also make a lot of food if people came over.
Yes. So, they brought their friends, or the friends liked to eat at our house because the meals were good. You know, I wasn't giving them kale smoothies. I was giving them meatloaf and chicken and, you know, with sauce.
Yeah. It's like anytime we have people over, we always make sourdough pizza, and it's always a thing.
Yeah.
You know, people love it.
And then they would have parties. We like to be the hosts of the parties because we wanted them at home. And we had a pool in the backyard. And so, you know, they were really fun. But we always had a keg. I didn't want them drinking hard liquor. So had a keg, but I always made food. And this is what always shocked me, when they'd go to these houses and have parties and nobody would eat anything. They would just be drinking on an empty stomach. Yeah. So the go-to food, we'd have slices of watermelon and quesadillas. And I'd stand at the stove and cook these quesadillas in lard. And the vegetarians would say, oh, these taste so good. How do you do this, Mrs. Bell? But I think, you know, they're going to have parties. And we took their keys away if they were drunk. And they all crashed on the floor and on the rug and slept through the night. And so We probably.
And then in the morning, you made them eggs and bacon.
Yeah, I did. We'd probably be sent to jail now for this because.
Yeah,
totally. I know.
Yeah. We've become very Victorian.
But I love that idea of being the house where the party is at. I think, you know, yeah. I agree with that. I want to do the same because for the same reasons, I want to be able to see my kids interacting with their friends and being be able to feed them and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, there was a few nights ago, we babysat another family's kids. They have three kids, same age as ours. And, you know, we fed them dinner and they played and whatever. And then the parents came home from their date night and, you know, I told them, oh, well, you know, everyone was great. They each ate three plates of food. And the parents were shocked. What do you mean they ate three plates of food? He lives on air. This kid doesn't eat a thing. And they were even more shocked when I said it was beef and sausage. Like they ate ground beef and sausage. And I made French fries in lard. I fried them in lard. Mm-hmm. And they were just blown away. And in my head, I was thinking, I mean, that's what real food does. Like if you're a kid that's starving all the time and then you're presented with real food, all of a sudden you think, oh, I haven't had something like this in forever.
There was a terrible accident. Four teenagers and my kids knew a couple of these kids when they were in high school and the car, they were drunk, the four girls, they were drunk and they crossed the median and it was a head-on collision and two were killed, two in the front were killed and the two in the back were severely injured. And there was an article in the paper about what they had done this evening. First they went to this house and they drank this and then they went to this house and they drank this and the parents were there, you know, and not one time did they get anything to eat. So they were drinking on empty stomachs. And they were, you know, really very drunk. And then this horrible accident happened. So, you know, I don't want to encourage drinking, but I'm a realist. I know they're going to drink and hopefully they'll just have a beer and eat a good dinner. That's what you hope for.
Yeah, I do sometimes wonder if the Europeans have it. A much healthier idea around that drinking thing than we do.
Well, you know, it's interesting. So we lived in France and the one time you get to meet the parents of the other children, because the French are very standoffish and they don't make friends easily, but is when they have parties. So birthday parties. And when they're teenagers, they have booms. They're called booms. And they do this. All the parents do this. Once a year, they'll have a boom for their kids and your kids go there and have music. They may have had wine, I don't know, but they have a big spread and they had smoked salmon and, you know, au fond gelée, eggs in gelatin and things that American kids just won't eat, but they, but that's what they do for their kids. They have a beautiful table of food at these teenage parties. It's a really big deal to have these parties. French tend to be really good dancers. Sometimes I'll have an instructor there teaching them how to dance. Yeah, and they have a good time. They really have a good
time. That sounds fun.
Yeah.
I know. I think I'm going to take some of these tidbits and apply them to my life when I have teenagers.
Have a teenage party and have lots of good food, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the European way, yeah.
I love that. Okay, let's talk for a minute about the foundation, about supporting it, about the conference.
Okay.
And all of that, whatever you want to say.
Okay, so the foundation is westonaprice.org. And if you're completely new to this, the website can be a little overwhelming. It's absolutely huge. But we have on the right-hand nav bar, we have Take a Tour. So we have our, you know, kind of introductory articles that you can go to. We hope that you'll become a member and receive our journal. We have a yearly conference. This year it will be in Orlando, October 25th through 27th. We have a lot of very interesting flyers, kind of nutrition lessons and tidbits. Mm-hmm. We publish a shopping guide that names brand names. And then we have another website, realmilk.com. If you're looking for raw milk, you'll find it there. So yeah, those are our websites. And my website is nourishingtraditions.com. I do blog, but not as often as I'd like, but there are articles there.
And then if you do become a member of the foundation, you get a journal, a quarterly journal. And that is jam-packed with scientific articles and gives you information on chapter leaders and just a whole bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, the front part of the journal tends to be a little technical because we want to make, you know, ensure that what we're saying is supported by the science. And then the back part of the journal tends to be more practical, cooking, articles on raw milk, that kind of thing. We also try to have an article in every issue about some culture population that's still eating traditional food. Yes, and then we have our chapter leaders are all listed, and we have people tell us they always read the advertisement section. So we have about 20 ads. Yeah,
I always read the advertisements too. It's fun to see who's back there.
And the chapters, people can go on there and find a local chapter, and those local chapter leaders are there to help you find real food, particularly raw milk, in your area. Sometimes they will host events, but that's not always required. So,
it's not required. What they are required to do is keep the local food list. So you're looking for raw milk, you're looking for farmers doing eggs, meat, or drop-off points, or food clubs, food groups. The chapter leader will be able to tell you that. Many of them keep a list of physicians who are holistic, if you're looking for a pediatrician or something like that. So it's all useful information. And then many times they do put on events so you can meet like-minded people in your area.
Yeah. All right. Do we have anything else, Christine?
I think that's it.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for having me, and we'll see you soon.
Sally, we appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Sally. Have a great day. Bye, guys.
Bye, y'all. Thanks for listening to Modern Ancestral Mamas. Check out the show notes for the resources. You can find Christine on Instagram at NourishTheLittles and online at NourishTheLittles.com. You can find Corey on Instagram at ForNutrientsSake and online at ForNutrientsSake.com. Follow us on Instagram at Modern Ancestral Mamas.
Opinions expressed in this episode are those of the guests. They do not reflect Corey and I's and Modern Ancestral Mama's personal views and opinions. We do not take responsibility for any ideas expressed during the podcast interview.
The information contained in this show is for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be medical advice and should not replace your relationship with your healthcare practitioner.